And we should have on the line with us Phil Taylor from the Taylor Report, International War Crimes Human Rights Investigator Phil Taylor, who is our special Africa and sometimes U.S. politics correspondent for this program. So let's see if this is working. Phil, do we have you on the line with us?
Yes, you do.
Oh,
nice
excellent.
To talk to you.
Oh, this is great. Okay. Well, there's been a lot happening in regard to Africa in the last week, in the last couple of weeks. Many news articles about Sudan, Congo, Rwanda, and it's been hard to keep up. But one
yes.
of yeah, I know it has. But one of the items of interest that came up was the role of the ICC, the International Criminal Court, how the supposed law is being applied to people. And I believe you recently spoke with a man named Mark Glendening, who had been looking at the ICC in relation to Sudan. Can you tell us about Mark Glendening?
Yeah, Mark Glendening is the director of a mission called a website, and I really recommend it. It's ICCwatch.org, and that ICC is, of course, for International Criminal Court. This is the permanent tribunal that was established. Canada participated in its establishment under the aegis of the United Nations, but it's a highly controversial court, and it's only recently been begun to bring charges, and so far it's very noticeable that the targets of the prosecution have been all from Africa. And the African Union, for example, has taken a stand saying there's something about it, either suggesting it's racist, and they have every right and every reason to think so. Mark Glendening is making all this available, the criticisms, the background story and whatnot on the ICC, and that website is supporting the position of Mr. Omar, Bashir Omar, the president of Sudan. The ICC is applauding the fact that he is saying that he does not intend at all to cooperate with that court, which has accused him of crimes against humanity. And the first thing that Mark Glendening points out, and but incidentally, as I'm saying this, I'll mention another name that may be known to your listeners, John Lachlan, who writes often in the British press, has published a couple of really very important books criticizing these super courts that have been established. They point out that Sudan, like the United States and like China and like Israel and like several other countries, and I think Russia, did not sign the agreement to recognizing this court. So as non-signatories to the court, that court doesn't have jurisdiction in their countries. And to say that it does means that you're forming a super government that will not recognize sovereignty and self-determination of peoples, but will instead impose some kind of its own ideas about international law. So they pointed out that this is, you know, very laudable that the Sudanese government is fighting for its rights, and it's not going to be intimidated by this title of International Criminal Court. It's a court which prosecutes in a very selective manner and seems to be racially motivated. It seems we all understand from our own culture it's easier to accuse people of color, and it tends to be believed, the charges tend to be believed more readily, and there's also an inherent kind of cultural, colonial idea, which is that we know best and we're going to help them. It's helping them to impose a law on a sovereign state, which happens to be Africa.
Well, you know, we had warned about...
By the way, I'll just say, today, the president of Sudan is visiting Cairo, and the government of Egypt is supporting him. This is really quite a moment in a way. I mean, it's almost like Africa and the Middle Eastern countries throwing down the gauntlet to the colonial powers, because the people driving this are the British, the French, Europeans, and the Americans, who are playing a double role, because the Americans do not recognize the ICC, and they say it has no jurisdiction over them. But meanwhile, President Obama and all of his acolytes and others are saying, oh, well, you know, this Bashir Omar, he needs to be charged. But they're not saying that they agree with him. And so the Arab states and the African states are pretty much saying to the world, you're not going to get away with this. You're not going to destroy the government of Sudan by pretending you are concerned about war crimes.
Well, you know, I mean, we just did an interview about George Galloway and his ban. They banned his ability to enter Canada. And at the same time, activists in Canada had been trying to say, why should we allow George Bush to come into the country? Because he was going to speak in Calgary. George Bush is a suspected war criminal. He's committed violations of international law in front of the whole world. His actions have led to the death of probably millions of people, if we're going by the studies in The Lancet and so forth. I mean, he's obviously a mass murderer and an enormous criminal, maybe the worst criminal in the world right now. And yet our Harper government welcomed him into Canada. He made a speech.
He's like the banks. He's too big to fail.
Too big to fail, yes. Absolutely.
He gets to go on because he's just too big.
He's too important. We all know that. We have an understanding that we can prosecute countries in Africa. We can persecute their leaderships.
Yes.
You know, it's assumed that they're criminal and warlords and so on and so on. But Bush, he committed all these crimes and everyone knows it, but he was the leader of the free world and he's just too powerful. We have to start with the easy cases. Maybe after we put Bashir away and then we put away some other African leaders and maybe some people in Asia and so forth, and after those, maybe after 100 countries, then maybe we'll be able to do the United States. But that's not.
It is something that they say. I was at the ICTR when they was founded there, and of course already the U.S. was saying these courts don't have anything to do with them, and all the defenders were saying what you just laid out, which is, this is the beginning, you see, and someday, you know, we can dream that you might charge a leader of one of the superpowers. But that is baloney. In fact, by the way, they're leaving out the most important element. They're really involved in what is called regime change, and a phrase we haven't heard for a while, but it's still going forward. This court is being used to try to change the regime in Sudan. It's not because there was some crime committed by Bashir, but it's that they don't like his government, and they've found a way, they think, to bring him down. Now, Mark Glendinning at ICCWatch.org has an article where they say they submitted evidence to this court that the rebels in Sudan have used child soldiers, which is allegedly one of the great crimes of our time. Throwing children into wars, and they provided that evidence. And of course, the court didn't react. I mean, so in other words, if you have evidence, that isn't the most important point. The point for them is they target certain people. So it's just like a policeman watching speeders go by, but he's waiting for the guy he doesn't like, and then he's going to pull him over.
Yeah, I can't stress this enough.
What the ICC is doing.
We have so many organizations in McMaster alone dedicated to saving children. You know, there's Save the Children Foundation, and there's Stop Children Killing, and so on and so forth. And they're all about the worst crime imaginable is to have children involved in a war situation. Then if you watch 24, it shows how the bad African warlords press children into military service and so on and so forth. And
crime, and it's allegedly a terrible, terrible crime.
It's a terrible crime.
But when there is child soldiers being used against the Sudanese government, suddenly they're kind of like, special heroes. And incidentally, the children we're talking about here were involved in an attack on the city of Khartoum. And I forget how many people were captured, but 90 captured fighters were children. Interesting for all these people to know, who were critical of Omar, the president of Sudan, is those children were released. They're not in prison. They're free in Sudan. So, because they were children, it's something that the United States doesn't do, of course. They have a man now, he's an adult, but he was a child soldier when captured by the Americans. They still won't release him. We had a 15-year-old Canadian. He's never been released.
And you mean Omar Khadr, of course.
Yeah. So it's just the hypocrisy is immense. It really is like talking about America's other problems. There are economic problems. There's just kind of a black hole of nobody knows the entire measurement of it involving their hypocrisy.
Yes, you know, and we had warned about this. We've warned about this for so long on the program now that the International Criminal Court and these other supranational legal institutions that are so heavily influenced by the United States, Great Britain, the so-called international community, would be used selectively against poor countries that run afoul of the United States. And that's exactly what's happening here.
Indeed. Exactly. Just a funny twist on it. Mark Glendening told me... And it's, again, at their website, iccwatch.org, but the one of the cries, one of the banners of this these tribunals is that they're going to end the culture of impunity. For too long, you know, bad people, particularly in Africa, have gotten away with things, but they're going to be brought to book. Curiously enough, the ICC personnel and its apparatchiks and judges and prosecutors are immune from prosecution. You can't do anything to them. If they come and they say, for example, in Sudan and they're claiming to be gathering evidence, but you find that they're dealing in drugs or mistreating women and you try to prosecute them, no, they're immune.
Yes, it's so like the new Watchmen.
This is a case of a disease-carrying man claiming to be a doctor, you know, and he's got a nice white coat on, but he's carrying a disease, but he says, no, you can't say anything to me.
Yes, reminds me of elements of the Larry Krotz lecture.
Impunity. So there's just no end to this. I think Kafka would have to turn into a sort of a stage comic to get all this material in. It's just absurd.
By the way, I should mention that there's a great video.
It really doesn't reflect on us very well that this baloney has been, you know, going forward. Everybody, they should have been laughed out of every international forum, this crazy attempt to create a super court which only prosecutes Africans.
Yes. Well, I'm sure we'll see more hilarious inconsistencies from this court as the weeks go on. We have to go very shortly, but I was wondering if you wanted to comment at all. There's the situation now in South Africa. It keeps coming up in the papers. There was that conference that was supposed to be about peace, anti-war, something like that, anti-racism, and they banned the Dalai Lama from speaking, and this has caused quite a row. On the one hand, you'd want free speech, and certainly the Dalai Lama should be able to speak, but he had been invited to as a participant in a peace and anti-racism type conference, but that appears there wasn't certain that was what he would be doing.
Yes, you know, I tell you, I looked into this today. I read the Globe story, I read the editorial, I read the small item in the Star, looked around a bit. But what I notice is we're not getting anything resembling reporting. We're getting a tilted is the word I want, story. Where South Africa is painted in a bad light, but we're not told who actually convened this conference. For example, one of the gambits they have is they say Nelson Mandela was among those who invited the Dalai Lama. But I noticed that Nelson Mandela is not quoted. He doesn't say he differs with the position of the South African government. Two people whose record I'm not impressed with, Bishop Tutu and de Klerk, the former white South African apartheid leader, they both said, oh, well, we're on the side of the Dalai Lama in this. Yeah, but they're not telling us what kind of conference. You know, when you bring a head of a religion or the head of a nation into a meeting, there are protocols involved, always. And so they're not explaining who was convening this conference. And the government of China, which has sovereignty over Tibet, they naturally speak up and say, why would he be there at that conference? We represent the country. So who is it who's inviting him, and what are they up to? And the Globe doesn't tell me. I actually can't. I now see where the story is, but I know they're not going to give it to me. So you, people like yourself and myself, we need to actually find out what that conference about soccer, whoever, whatever it was, it's linked to a major match and all that. What's going on there? Because you can smell politics, international politics, not just South African politics, just what little evidence they've given us.
And
I just want to remind your listeners that the Dalai Lama was once, by his own admission, on the payroll of the Central Intelligence Agency of the United States when it did not recognize China and was manipulating him and others to try to overthrow the Chinese government. So the Chinese government has every reason to be on their toes when they deal with him.
I'm just thinking it's too bad we don't have time to address this, but certainly this comes as a major issue for South African politics because South Africa has been criticized roundly in our media in Canada, the United States, and the UK in particular. It's criticized by the establishment media for defending regimes that we don't like. They stand up for Zimbabwe, they stand up for China, they stand up for other countries when they're supposed to be taking our position, you know, the U.S. position or the Canadian position that X country is bad. So they're standing up with people that they see as allies and trying to determine their own foreign policy, and we're sort of, you know, beating them over the nose with a newspaper saying no.
Yeah, well, we didn't allow the ANC to enter Canada. We didn't allow Nelson Mandela and his supporters. We were quite happy to allow in apartheid people. Whereas the Chinese did not do that. The Chinese were never friendly to the apartheid government, and they always voiced their opposition and voted against the South African apartheid regime. So they, you know, they really don't need any lecturing from Canada at all.
In terms of the ways they see it and their history, it was the South African resistance to apartheid, and China saw eye to eye on this, where Canada was backing apartheid. And so now we're coming and we're getting involved in Tibet affairs and telling South Africa what to do, and it's just the same old story to them.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have one of my favorite pictures is of Jesse Helms and the Dalai Lama together. Jesse Helms is a champion of white power in southern United States, and he and his good friend, the Dalai Lama.
Yeah, so it makes for some strange alliances when you're...
Yes.
Maybe we'll see how this develops.